good. Yes! And surely that's the goal!
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to Sensible Sunderland. It's another copy and paste job this week, as we find ourselves once again on the wrong end of a 1-0 scoreline, this time at Vicarage Road, and a Watford side who, to be honest, looked every bit as poor as us. This week, it's just me and Lee, as we're still waiting on Dan's body to turn up, and we simply refuse to pay the ransom for Mark. Look, I'm just going to dive straight into it, Lee. I sensed you were a very angry bunny from our group chat yesterday, so I'll just let you get it off your chest. What were your thoughts?
To be honest, it's hard to describe like how pitiful it is, isn't it? It's all you've got to do is just rant at them, because nobody's taking charge and nobody's like kind of rolling the sleeves up, and that's what pisses everybody off. I know we'll go into a bit more detail, but the bit that like the cherry on the icing for me was there was a certain point in the match in the second half where Ekwa pulls out of a tackle that he should be winning. And yeah. it just sums it all up. Like, there's just no effort there. They all want to just get into the summer. They've got the beach hats on. It's just, yeah, like I say, it's just infuriating, especially for those away fans who've travelled down, paid all that money, and then to see the team half-arses. It's just infuriating.
Yeah. Like I say, there comes a point where you have to go into it with some sort of professional pride. Like, look, I get it. Like, I know there's now to play for. I know you don't really have to prove anything to Mike Dodds because he's probably not going to be there next season. But still, like, for your own, you know, personal pride, why aren't you giving this everything you've got? I mean, one thing I'll say personally, is I was watching it yesterday and I was just thinking, like, I don't care anymore. Like, granted, I was annoyed last week after Millwall, but yesterday I just kind of shrugged my shoulders and I was just a bit like meh about the whole thing, really. Like, Dan hit the nail on the head last week when he said it's like counting down shifts at work before you go away. And I felt like watching it, I just kind of ticked it off and I was just like, right, like one more to go. And by what you've just said there, I feel like there's a lot of us feeling the same.
It's just like I say, I just can't wait for the season to be over, and hopefully during the summer we get some positivity, something to scream about, and you know, we know what the silly season gets like. We get linked with all these names and who scored how many goals in the second division in Spain and stuff like that. But yeah, like I say, I mean, I'm a big fan of the transfer window anyway, but there's just kind of, it can't be any worse than what's happened this past 6 months or so.
Well, I mean, we all, you know, we've said it on other podcasts, like, we all hope that the club aren't stupid enough to basically think they can just get away with signing young talent in the summer. Again, we'll go on to it in greater detail, but, you know, if the rumours about what's his face, is it Chris Willock, Joel Willock's brother, who we've been linked with?
Yeah.
You know, he's 26. I mean, you know, he's not the best player in the world. I've seen him a few times for QPR. He hasn't really impressed me, but just the fact that we are willing, you'd think, we pay money for someone over the age of 9 years old. Like, do you know what I mean? It just shows that maybe there is a bit of flexibility in the model now.
But that's the thing with him, though. His contract's out in the summer, so we ain't paying any money for him.
Oh, is that right? Oh,
yeah. His contract's up for QPR fans going nuts because apparently he's actually signed a deal with us. But so, like I say, he's already agreed up. QPR fans are going nuts. We've getting him on a free. 26 years old, so is it any different than the model that we've already seen? Not paying fees for players over 25?
Yeah,
I don't know how much that's... Yeah, I've been reading up on it today, and the QPR fans are absolutely fuming about us because apparently he's had some really bad injuries while he's been playing for them over the past couple of seasons, and they've kind of helped him come through all that, and then all of a sudden he's just dropped tools and gone.
Right, to be fair, you know, like you'd look at it and you'd say, well, Sunderland's a step up on QPR, but I was looking at the table yesterday. I'm sure QPR has only 3 points behind us now.
It wouldn't surprise us because, like you see, I think I heard a stat earlier on. We can finish as low as 18th, which is crazy, by the way, considering where we were at the turn of the year.
Basically, when we started this podcast, where we were.
Yeah, 100%. We are 100% the downfall of Sunderland AFC. Not Michael Bale, not Christian Speakman. It is 100% Sensible Sunderland.
Yeah, I'll take it on the chin. But I mean, one person who I think we're all, you know, maybe starting to well, I mean, not starting to blame. I think there's a few of us been blaming for a couple of weeks. Obviously, Mike Dodds just comes across as a man very much just out of his depth. You know, he's one. We're all saying, Dan said last week, he's trying to preserve his reputation. I think he's very much just trying to get through to the end of the season like everybody else. But I mean, again, even his interview yesterday where he was saying like, well, I don't know how we've come away losing that game. We created chance after chance. We looked very good on the ball. And it's just, you watch it and you think like, what game are you watching, mate? Because like, both teams yesterday, none of them could keep the ball. It was comical at times. Like a game of basketball, the amount of turnovers there were yesterday in possession.
Like you see, I mean, obviously I was very active on the Sensible Sunderland Twitter page yesterday, screaming and ranting about Dodds and the team. But honestly, I want whatever he's smoking, because he clearly wasn't on this planet when he was watching us play football yesterday. We were so atrocious. And don't get us wrong, I thought for the most part we defended quite well, but it was that transition when we retained the ball and we were trying to move it forward. We just couldn't. We couldn't get it to stick. We were just giving it straight back to Watford. It was so, so poor. And I think he's basically saying that we deserve to be 2-0 up because Chris Rigg missed a chance. And then Try Hume put one just slightly dipped over the bar. But that's all we did all match. I cannot remember anything of note happening in the second half other than their goal. But we were just absolutely atrocious. Jack Clark had a couple of half attempts. I wouldn't even, like you say. But realistically, what do we offer to that game? What have we offered for the past 6 months?
Mm-hmm. You've said the right thing. Like it is, everything seems to be a half chance, doesn't it? You know what I mean? There's nothing kind of clear cut. I mean, there's one in the second half, which we'll get onto, but I just want to talk about, you know, their goal. Because they weren't threatening themselves, man. They were every bit as bad as us, but it was similar to Millwall last week when it was like, we're there every bit as bad as us, got 0-0 written all over it. And then they somehow get a goal. It comes straight through the middle of the pitch again. I mean, I will say we're missing Dan Neil. I'm not saying he would have stopped the goal yesterday, but, you know, when you see Ekwa and Job just jogging, you know, as they tend to do.
Yeah.
Ball gets played out wide, and I think it's Callum Stiles caught out of position. And I don't think it's a bad finish by, what was his name, Ryan Andrews, who gets the goal. Yeah. Aye. But, I mean, Patterson was poor. Just the ball just goes underneath him, basically.
Yeah. Like you said, Patterson could have done better, maybe, but for me, again, midfield non-existent, and Callum Stiles, Christ, it was like he was jogging through custard. Like that Andrews, once he'd set himself away, that was it. There was no catching him from Stiles. And like I say, we should be leaving Stiles behind. I know he's had a couple of good games for us, but a couple of good games doesn't really warrant paying out any kind of fee from him. I would think next week will probably be the last time we see him.
I don't know, mind. I don't know whether I'm just, you know, being too overly optimistic here, but for some reason with him, I just want to give him a summer. I want to give him a summer and a pre-season and a coach who's actually going to come in and say it to him. Because I think that's his problem. He said himself he still doesn't know what position he's playing. I know he made a comment last week about like doubling down, you know, and getting a midfield role, but like that obviously isn't the case after yesterday.
Well, to be fair, like you say, he didn't do anything particularly wrong in midfield. It was when he was moved to left back that we ended up conceding. So maybe there is a bit of thought that needs to go into that.
I think he just needs, he's like a lot of them, they all just need a bit of direction.
And to be honest, I'm going to consistently stick the knife through Michael Dodds here, because I don't know what he's doing on that training pitch. I don't know why he brings Barron, who's very much out of form, to replace Rigg. If you're going to try something, at least try Tommy Watson. You know what I mean? Like, at least try Mundell.
Like you say, I'm at that point now where, quite frankly, I just don't care. So when he brought doing a bar on, I was like, oh, here we go, a bit of fucking madness. Bit of fucking doing a madness coming up. Here he is, But no, didn't do out.
Again, another one who I think probably just needs a loan to kind of go and prove himself, because I don't think he's at championship standard yet. I know he's had the odd spell here and there where he's kind of scored this odd goal or created an assist, but he has no consistency about his game at all. So, again, go away, play 30 games in another league, another country and then come back and we'll make a choice on them. But next season, I'll be amazed if he's even on the bench.
Yeah. I mean, this, again, it's all ifs and buts because we don't know. We hope the club don't make the same mistakes. But I would hope that a lot of the players that we're seeing this season who were saying, you know, they're not just quite ready, they do get those loan moves away, whether it's to League One, another lower table championship club. Even if they get sent out, I know it hasn't really done out for Bryantis and who's the other one who's gone over to Scotland, Maeda.
Maeda,
aye. You know, but even send them to Scotland, send them, you know, League Two. There we go. There you are. Can't say we're not educated here on Sensible Sutherland Mind. But look, I said about Patterson being at fault for the goal. I know there's, for some reason, I don't get it, but there's an element of our support who I think really have it in for Anthony Patterson. But like, I was getting annoyed yesterday, not even like before the goal, just his general distribution and like his kicking. I was just like, what?
It was shocking. There was, like I said, there was a couple of times where he was moving the ball around the back line and then he'd go for a little chip over the top to get it to the fullback or the wingers. Mm-hmm. And it was just kicked into the crowd.
Comes across as like lack of concentration, Ricky, when you don't quite connect with the ball the way you're meant to. And like, it annoys me in general, like not just with us, but like just football generally now. Like every team now tries to play out from the back because it's like seen as this ultra modern, like trendy thing to do. But like blatantly obvious with people like Pato, like he's not that comfortable with it. And the thing is, they don't have the, like these players, I get that he's young, but it's like he doesn't have the brain to go, right, well, I've nearly been caught here a couple of times, maybe I'll stop. They just think, no, I've been taught to play this way, I'm going to do it. Like, it's so robotic. Like, think for yourself.
Well, Pato, I find it very strange that, you know, we have this kind of, and I do believe it is a minority of supporters that kind of would like to see the bat of him in the summer, which, to be fair, to be honest, I do think we might. It just all depends whether he wants to go out there and be a backup keeper to Alisson. But yeah, I find it bizarre because when you think about the kid that came in, when we recalled him in League One, you know, that lad who came in is nowhere near the player that we've got now. We've really done good work with Pato. And the fact that he's had like, kind of, I can't remember, it was like 150 games or around about that mark where he's played consecutively for Sunderland. It's just a bit of a credit. And I think it needs, we should show a bit more support. I think you're going to get it all the time, aren't you? Because I think especially, I might be wrong, but we're especially critical of our homegrown players. I don't know whether it's a bit like, because like, oh, you should be doing it for the shirt and the badge and, you know what I mean? Every kind of fan behind you wants to wear that shirt and stuff.
Some players just aren't good enough. Like as much as we've like, you know, been annoyed this season at some of the levels of performances, like from people like Ekwa, where we've said like, oh, he's just so lethargic and things like that. I don't think he's not trying. I think it's just like, say, it's just the way he is. There's none of them that I think aren't given anything less than 100%. But like, see, they're just not as good as we want them to be, really.
Yeah. Like you see, I think, again, he's the knife coming out for Dodds, but it's a lack of direction. Like, where Tony Mowbray had Ekwe, and he said, I need him to be more aggressive, more physical. I need him to put his leg in where it hurts. I don't think he's getting that from this current setup. Like, realistically, Ekwe, and there was a part, so like I say, he pulled out of the tackle, which he absolutely should have been coming away from the ball with. But for me, I just want him to go and put his knee through somebody. Like, I want him to develop that nasty streak where everybody goes, oh, he's a bit of a bastard, him, isn't he?
Yeah.
But I just can't see it coming from, because like you said, he's this happy, smiling person. You don't think he's got that nasty streak in him.
You know what? He needs something tragic to happen in his life. In fact, I can't say that.
That's a bit extreme, man.
If anything does happen now, I'm suspect number one. Like, if anything bad happens to him. But no, like, you know, we used to always say about like Cattermole, like sometimes he'd go in, he'd be a bit daft and he'd get like daft yellows. But there was loads of games, wasn't there, where like early doors, you know, getting ran ragged, and then he would just like put his leg through somebody, and it was like, it needs that sometimes, and that's just what we're so lacking at the minute. Like you say, just a big, hard, like nasty bastard, just to like put a marker down, really.
Yeah. But, I mean, me memory of Cattermole goes obviously back to the callback one. I think that was like 40 seconds in or something. Absolutely cripples him. I don't think he played in the Premier League again after that. You know what I mean? Like, I'm not asking Ekwa to go out and, you know, destroy somebody's career. But what I'm asking him to do is, like you say, lay down that marker and show that the other team's midfield, it's not going to be an easy ride. I am going to bully you at every point. Like you say, go to the littlest man on the pitch and just hit him. Just hit him as hard as you can. And just lay down that idea of, you know, you are not in for an easy ride.
Yeah. Because, like I say, it disrupts, doesn't it? That's all it does. It's not going to win us the game. But it's just gonna disrupt them in the way that they're going to approach the game going forward. Look, Edward, obviously you say we pull out tackles. I think we did have a few chances. I mean, like you say, Riggy had a couple in the first half.
There's that Rig one just before the Hume chipped thing, where he's so unfortunate because if he hits that first time, he probably scores the goal. But because he takes that extra touch, it takes that bit wider. And obviously, I mean, I think it takes a minor touch off the keeper's foot. It should have been in the corner, but makes it look that much worse.
Yeah, that it
went as a goal kick, and it was like, oh my God, how is that done? But at the end of the day, I'm not going to stick the boot in the Rig, because I think out of everybody, he's the one who's trying to drag players up by the scruff of the neck. And I keep getting bewildered by him getting subbed off. I know he's a young kid, but he's the only one who's shouting and barking orders.
Yeah, it's like with Dodds, he's one of those managers who just seems to have it's as if he sets his stall up before the game. Like he doesn't let the game dictate his decision making. He just, it's as if he thinks, right, okay, I'm going to play Chris Reig up until the 65th minute, and then I'm going to take. And it's like, I get that there's some games where you can do that, but like sometimes you've got to like make an audible call really, and like basically judge it on how the game's going. And like I say, you just. Doesn't seem to have the imagination to do that.
No.
Clark had a few chances, obviously, yesterday's. He's like typical, you know, cutting inside, getting a shot off, but just didn't come off for him. There was a few times yesterday, to be honest, where I was getting annoyed at him for not passing the ball. I thought he was trying to do too much at times, but it summed up just how we are.
Do you think there's an element that Clark isn't fit? Because you've got to think, when he initially got injured, we were all under the impression that, you know, we'll never see Clark in a Sunderland shirt again. And then I think it was roughly about 6 weeks later, he comes back and he's not really done anything since. I can't think of a goal. I can't think of an assist. And even like I said yesterday, he's running past people. He seems a bit leggy. His passes are a bit wayward. His shots, he grass cutters. There's just an element of me that where Dodds has gone, I'm going to chuck him on there because I know Clark can create something from nothing, and that's how we're going to win games. And that's pretty much what he's rolled the dice on, is if I stick Clark out there, something might happen.
You know, I know you obviously want to play your best 11 and win every game, but like we all know, Clark is our cash cow at the end of the season. And I think it's a massive risk for a team that's gotten out to play for. If he is injured or he is carrying an injury, why would you risk him?
For me, you've got likes of, you know, we've just signed Mundell. I think it was a 4-year contract or something along those lines.
Mm-hmm.
You've got Tommy Watson, who's come through the academy and is playing exceptionally well for the under-21s. You've even got, and I know I'm going to get pelters for this, but you've got Abdullah Bar there. If you see these players as the successor to Jack Clark, you need to give them the opportunity to prove it. If you just keep playing Jack Clark, even though we it's 99%, you know, over the hill that he's going, stop playing him. And put people who are going to be in here next season.
It would make sense. I mean, getting away from Jack Clark, going on the other wing, you obviously brought Harry Roberts on second half. I know you've been very disappointed with Patrick Roberts this season and his just lack of end product. I mean, he had that chance yesterday. I think it was when Hamia came on and Hamia had the ball. I think it was right side of the box, and he just like pulls it across. And like, I was just in disbelief that we'd somehow missed that chance. Do you know the one I made where the ball just seems...
To be honest, like I said, it's hard to forget. Like you see, if an informed Paddy Roberts, so say last season's Paddy Roberts, belts that and goes in. Like I see, I know he's trying to take it on his left foot. By the time it gets to his left foot, it's way behind him. He needs to be hitting that with his right foot first time. Just as soon as it comes to a bang, hit it. You're, what, 6 yards out? Just get any connection on it and see what happens. But yeah. Instead, he's tried to, I don't know whether he's tried to take it under control, tried to hit it with his left foot, but he ends up with a tangle in his feet and he's on the deck. And like you see, I kind of sat there, mouth agape, just in total shock that how on earth did he miss that? Because by the way, I know he hasn't had the best season, but that from Hamea to run into the channel, get like take the ball down, get into the box, goes past his man, puts the ball back into a dangerous area, right? That's probably the best thing Hamea's done all season. And he's coming away with nothing. You know what I mean? Like, you know what? I do actually feel a bit sorry for him because he's done really well there and somebody should be getting on that ball and putting it in the back of the net.
Yeah, I actually saw a few people try to defend Paddy Robertson, say, oh, it's a bad ball from him here. But
No, it wasn't.
No, wrong with it. Like, I'm don't care. Like, should be burying that without a doubt. Where do you see Paddy Roberts? It might be stupid to get rid of Roberts if we know Clark's going, but there is a few people I've seen, mind, who kind of feel we've reached the end of the road with Patrick Roberts. Do you think that is the case? Or is he like the rest of them and he just needs a bit of direction, a bit of kind of confidence restored?
No, I think with Paddy, he's obviously had a really stop-start season with his injuries. And I think, I don't know how long his contract runs for, but I believe he signed a new one quite recently. So for me, I don't know, I'll be keen to keep him because when he is on form, he is an exceptionally good player. But like you see, he needs that management. That's somebody who'd probably put their arm around him like Tony used to do and just guide him through a game and maybe, build his confidence back up. If he went, I don't think I would be like really unhappy and, upset about it. But if he did go, I think he'd bring in some good money despite this season because people saw him with Ahmad last year, obviously saw what he did in League One where, and to be honest, I think we've got to remember this. He came, we got him pretty much on a free and there's a reason for that. And that I think that this season has showed why we got him on a free.
Yeah. Well, that's what I was getting at. Like we all saw in Sunderland Lie Die when they had that episode where kind of delved into like Paddy Roberts' like psychology and like the career he's had. He's always seemed to go through these like peaks and troughs. He's always been a player since he went to Man City at an early age. He's always like had a bit of a like a target on his head as like one to watch. And he seems to go through these, like you say, peaks and troughs where he's either up there or down there. And I think it all depends on how he's feeling like in himself. And I think when he obviously came to Sunderland and we got him on that free, it was because he was at the bottom. And like you say, we thankfully restored a bit of confidence. He had someone like Tony Mowbray. And to be fair, Alex Neil did the same, where put an arm around him, built him up. And it's just a bit sad because I'm watching him and I'm thinking, like, is he regressing back to that? And like, I know we rip the piss out players and that, and like, we want them to win. But like, I don't know whether it's just I'm getting like softer as I get older or whether like, because I've seen some Lie Die, I tend to look at players now as like, especially since I've been in the low leagues, I tend to look at them as like a bit more human. And like when I can see that maybe something's not right, like, you know, like in the head, I do get a bit worried for them, like personally, because I think like what's going on? Like even yesterday, it's going to sound daft, but there was a point where he was taking a corner and like his hair wasn't gelled back and he had a scruffy beard. And I was like thinking like, he's not, you know what I mean? He's not in a shape. Even that, and it sounds daft because like that shouldn't have an impact. But I was like thinking like, I hope he's all right. You know what I mean?
But do you know what it is with Roberts? Like I see it. I think he gave me, like I see it, one of the greatest goals, like feeling wise when he scored that winner against Sheff Wed in there. Playoff semi-final. You know what I mean? Like I remember thinking like, because it was rocking at their place. You know what I mean? Like it was a proper cauldron. But when that goal went in, I've never felt relief like it. Honestly, like more relief getting past Sheff Wed than Ross Stewart putting the second one in against Wigan at the playoff final. Like there was more relief there because even though I was like a bag of nerves at the playoff final, I was more nervous about us getting past Sheff Wed at that point. But me with a better team, you know what I mean? So like I see it, I'll always, have really fond memories of Patrick Robertson. Like you see, some of the goals he scored for us, especially last season, the way him and Ahmad combine, and they were just pinging balls in left, right, and center in the top corner from like 30 yards out. Like, you can't deny the talent is there. It's just obviously, whether it's his fitness, whether it's his current mental state and confidence levels and stuff like that. But there's obviously something not right with him at the minute. Mm-hmm. So if he wanted to go elsewhere to kind of find his feet again, you know what I mean? Good luck to the guy, because I've only got fond memories of him. It just hasn't worked this season for him. Something's not clicked. Obviously, he's missed Ahmad, but I feel like it's more than that, because Paddy Roberts can do special things on his own.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. Mind, it's funny what you say about the Sheffield Wednesday goal, because, I mean, I suppose it doesn't really count now because Sheffield Wednesday won yesterday, so they're safe. But I did see someone earlier in the week saying, Paddy Roberts, I don't think he's actually scored a goal for us this season. I think one thing we all remember him for, like you say, is that goal at Hillsborough in the League One playoffs. And I think he also scored a goal when he was at Derby to relegate Sheff Wed to League One. So people were saying it would be typical, because he's like the scourge of Sheffield Wednesday, get his one and only goal next week to essentially relegate them. But Sheffield Wednesday won, I think, 3-0 yesterday. So, you know,
they absolutely pierced the thing, didn't they?
Absolutely.
But yeah,
Tango's next week. I don't know what's going to happen next week. They're going to fucking pay us.
Do you know what it is? Like, see, if we finish 18th, it's obviously been a bad season anyway. But I don't think, until I heard that stat today, I realised how bad this season could actually be.
Yeah, like you see, take our early season form out the window when we were actually like all right, and it still felt like we were performing at the same level as last season. You take that out of the equation, and we'd be cut adrift. We'd be like Rotherham.
I think we would be. You know, I mean, how many points did Moby pick up? 40 something.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? And we're on 57. It doesn't make for good reading. It's really, really bad when you think about it that way, because the appointments of Bale and Dodds have obviously been an absolute disaster. But mm-hmm. I don't think, because we were so safe through Mowbray, I don't think anybody's quite had a look into it. It was just kind of, you know, we had Mowbray, then we got Dodds in for a few games and things were still a bit rosy in the garden. Then we had Bale, and we had just Bale to focus on, and everybody hated him. There was a lot of vitriol around the club. And then we've getting Dodds, and we've been on this losing streak. So no, I feel like I haven't heard anybody say it, but like, we'd have been relegated. We'd have been relegated. You know what I mean? Like, and I know a couple of weeks ago, we were kind of just starting to peer over our shoulder about what was below us. But like, this could have been an absolute monstrosity of a season. Like, this could have been one of the worst seasons in Sunderland's history, and that's saying something.
Yeah, we've had plenty of contenders, haven't we? But yeah, the manager is obviously key in the summer, whoever we get in. I tend not look at rumour mills and things like that, because I just get bored by it all, to be honest. But I know you've been keeping your ear to the ground with managerial stuff. So what's it looking like at the minute in terms of the appointment? Who's on the list? Any new names or...?
So,
like Will Steele, is he still top guy?
I think he's still there or thereabout. But a new name that's been mentioned, I think it was this morning, might have been yesterday, is René Maric. So he's a 31-year-old coach, which, you know, kind of fits in with Speakman's model. He's currently working at Bayern Munich under-19s, and he's previously worked at Leeds under Jesse March and Marco Rose at Dortmund. So he's... I wouldn't say he's quite a high-profile coach, but he's definitely worked in some really, really top jobs. And like you say, the Marco Rose and Dortmund one kind of speaks volumes, because I think they had a pretty good relationship right at the death, and they did quite well on them. So I don't know. Like I say, it's a new name. It kind of fits with everything I've been saying over the past couple of months, where I think this name will just pop up all of a sudden. And Sunderland will have their new head coach, you know, and it'll be a name that nobody's heard of, or very few people have heard of. And he'll have been about and done this, that, and the other. Like you say, similarly, the appointment that we wanted to make last summer, that I think he was called Farioli, the Nice manager.
Yeah.
So, like I say, I think I don't think it's going to be a name. Like, I know Mark absolutely dotes over Steve Cooper. And even Paul Heckenbottom, I don't think it's going to be one of these. I do think it's going to be one of these names where it's just so entirely random. And like it's almost like a game of Football Manager, like which coach can I pick out of which team?
Yeah, you're looking to just find a, I think the very like dead set on finding like a hidden gem. I think that's kind of what they're hoping for. And I get it. And to be honest, it wouldn't surprise me if that's the key to Sunderland's success. Just getting this random bloke in who nobody has heard anything about and them just taking us forward. Like, I'd love it. But it's all well and good. Even though those are massive clubs, Borussia Dortmund and Bayern Munich, it's all well and good, you know, being a coach and being well thought of within that circle. But like, what I will say is, like, so is Mike Dodds. You know what I mean? Mike Dodds is well thought of in a coaching capacity. Can he make the step up to become a manager? Who knows? But if he gets the chance, it's up to him to take it, isn't it?
Yeah, 100%. And to be honest, I would say that for anybody who comes through the door, it's a huge opportunity. A huge opportunity for anybody, despite recent results and despite this season in overall. Like, this is a big, big football club to manage. And the potential is endless if you can come in and get your style of football across and you can get your point across, make some good results. Like, the ceiling is high, but it's also down to Spiegelman to deliver players to kind of suit and, you know, push us on to the next level. Because I think the past 2-3 transfer windows have been uninspiring, to say the least.
Yeah.
He's got a big job on his hand this summer as well. Like you say, not just coach-wise, which, to be honest, is going to be his first one, but he's got a lot of holes to plug.
Do you think the expectations have changed after this season? Do you think, I'm not saying it was the club's plan to regress, like that's stupid, but obviously expectations going in, this season, the season we're having now, were ridiculously high after, you know, last season. And do you think now, because we're, as you say, we could finish as low as 18th, do you think the aim will still be playoffs? Or do you think the club might use that and say, well, you know, we finished 18th next season, let's just try and get in that top 10? Do you think Sunderland fans will actually stand for that? Or do you think we're still going to have our sights aimed high?
To be honest, I think we've, despite all these shortcomings this season, I still believe that we have an ambitious owner. I still believe that he will not accept this feeling. Like, and like you say, he's got a big old job on his hands in the summer, but that's potentially going to be backed up with 40 million off one player. You know, you've got the likes of Jack Clark, Dan Ballard, Dan Neil, Patterson, Hume, who've all been linked with clubs away. And if I'm not saying they will, by the way, and I don't think they should, but if they sell those five players, you're going to bring in a hell of a lot of money. You know what I mean? So we'll have money to kind of repair the squad and try and improve it where it needs be. Because like you say, we all know our shortcomings this season, being a goal scorer, holding midfield there. I would go as far as say, and I love the guy, especially after his handball yesterday, but I don't think 09 is the centre-back that we need. I think if he needs to come in and he can plug gaps here and there, fair enough, but I think there's a lot of like really modelling needs doing on that squad. Get rid of some dead wood, bring some players in, build the squad out. So, you know, like you see over the past couple of seasons, especially towards the back end of the season, we've been like down to the bare bones. But he needs a big, big, big win during the summer. So hopefully we can get it.
So in terms of that squad rebuild, I know we mentioned Chris Willock earlier on, which, as you said, seems to be pretty much a done deal. Anything else you've strange heard in terms of this players coming?
I'll quickly run back to Chris Willock. Like you say, I know I've seen things like, oh, has the model kind of slightly changed? In my opinion, no. We're still getting a plus 25-year-old on a free transfer. I find it really, really surprising that we've actually, if it is true, by the way, because at the minute it's just rumours, there's been no official announcement or anything like that. So he's played 38 times this season. So by the looks of it, he's over his injury concerns. But he's only got 4 goals and 4 assists. So yes, it's an improvement on a current Paddy Roberts, but is it really what we need? Like 4-4, it's the best return in the world. So I'm still a bit wary on that one. The only other one I've seen is a young lad called Drama appeared in Sevilla's B team. And I've seen a couple of stats thrown about. He's a striker, but can play right wing, left wing. 30 appearances, 10 goals, 3 assists. And he's 22, which kind of seems to fit more with the model. So, yeah, 10 goals, 3 assists. Better than any of our strikers combined. So,
But see what I would say about that again, though. Like, again, he deserves a chance to prove himself. But if you remember, Hamia was signed from Benfica.
Yeah, 100%.
With a 100%. Similar record. Do you know what I mean? He was head and shoulders above everybody. But Wilson, who was... Wasn't Rusin like second top scorer in his league last season?
Something like that. From the left wing, he scored like 13 goals or something. But again, he's never had the chance to play in that position, has he? Because obviously Clark's been fit for the full season, except those 68 weeks. And then Rusin also gets injured during that period. So he's never had a chance to play in what probably is more his natural position.
We'll see. Like, I'm expecting, I don't want to beat the same drum time and time again, but those players you've mentioned there, Chris Willett, a bit more experienced, but as you say, it's a free, so it's not really too much strain away from the model. That young lad, to me, if we're signing players like that, that is just potentially going to be the same mistake as we've made in signing Hamia and Mayenda and obviously Burstow and Rusin. So I think they probably won't become available till the end of the season. But I think we definitely need, especially in the striker department, we need a big midfielder and we need a experienced, no-nonsense striker just to try and just run the line. That's what we're sorely lacking in it.
Like you say, I mean, yesterday, again, it was just the same stuff when it will just pass it about. Mm-hmm. But nobody's like trying to clip a ball in over the top because we've got nobody to play on the back line. Nobody play on the shoulder to try and run in behind and stuff like that. Yeah, again. I guess I've already stuck the knife into Dodds enough this episode, but I know people say him as a top coach, but I just don't get where they get that from because I don't see what he's done.
Yeah, same. But look, again, it's always going to be negative after a defeat, but were there any positives, would you say, from yesterday? Anything at all?
We didn't come away with any injuries, so that's always a big one. We've only got 90 minutes of football left, so that's two. I've got two already.
To be honest, we've only got one more game was my only positive, and that's it. It's all games like. I'm literally just thinking, one more to go, let's just go and get it out the way.
To be honest, I just think, just get this next 90 minutes out of the way. If we finish 18th, so what, you know what I mean? Like, I'm past the point of care and now I know the season's over, but God forbid this is the same thing next year. God forbid.
It'll be a lot more toxic next year if we haven't learned our lessons. But I mean, getting away from the game, one thing I do want to touch on, obviously sad news broke on Thursday morning, I think it was, that Charlie Hurley had passed away at the age of 87. So I think it's been a pretty emotional week for Sunderland fans anyway. I mean, obviously, you know, Charlie Hurley is well before mine and your time, Lee, and probably for the majority of people listening to this podcast. But I mean, to me, that's just testament to his legacy, really, and how revered he was at Sunderland that, you know, even if you never saw him play by a good 50 years, everyone at Sunderland like knows who Charlie Hurley is.
Yeah, yeah. Credit to Watford as well, by the way, on this, because they put the picture of him up on the scoreboard. Nice. You know what I mean? And I think that's a really nice touch from a club that's, as far as I'm aware, he never played for. So yeah, like, fair play to Watford, and obviously really sad news about Charlie Hurley's passing.
Yeah, I mean, I say everyone at Sunderland knows Charlie Hurley. Me mum didn't. And one story I will tell is my first ever Sunderland game was actually the last game at Roker Park. It was a friendly against Liverpool. And still to this day, I don't know the inside story of how it happened. I don't know whether, like, my mum told the stewards I was a Make-A-Wish kid or whatever, but like, she somehow blagged us on like the pitch before the game, and we ended up going like behind the scenes and like in the tunnel in the dressing room and all sorts. But you could tell after about 20 minutes, because my mum's not really interested in football. I think she just came along for like the historic like significance of it. You know what I mean? Last game at Roker Park. So we're obviously there, me and my dad, my brother, my mum, and like by about 20 minutes of this VIP treatment. It's going to Mam's head a bit, and she's starting to like, kind of, you know, push her way down corridors, push past people. And she's like, putting at this old man, kind of just dawdling in front of us. And like, she like, kind of shoved past him a little bit. And I'll never forget my dad's face. My mum had only pushed past Charlie early because she didn't know who he was. Player of the century. But no, it was, you know, a massive, massive, I think, you know, it sounds really cliche, but like the word, the term legend gets thrown around a lot, doesn't it? Especially at Sunderland. But I think, you know, he
really is, isn't he? He's like, really.
Yeah, top table of legends, really, isn't he?
Yeah.
And I was reading a story about during the week, I think it was 1967 or something. Well, obviously he was captain when we got promoted in 64, our first ever promotion. But he basically, the PFA Player of the Year, I think it went to Bobby Moore. But like second runner-up was actually Charlie Early, even though Charlie Early was playing in the second division at the time. That's how like, well thought of he was. And I think you would get that happening now.
No, I don't. But like I say, as long as my memory serves, I've never seen a player in the second division get anywhere near us. You know what I mean? So, yeah, like I say, it's just a testament to the character he was and obviously how much he loved the football club. So, yeah, just like you say again, it's really sad to see such a legend pass. You know what I mean?
Yeah, it'd be nice of the club, I think, to give him a bit of recognition as well. I mean, you know, there's already been talk of a statue being built. That would be my preference personally. But other people have said, you know, just naming a stand after him, that sort of thing would be nice. But even I've heard a few people suggest that. I think it'd be a nice little touch. Playing in white shorts next week, because for sort of the most of the 60s and the early 70s, we actually did play in white shorts, like during his era. And I know it probably doesn't feel very Sunderlandy, but, you know, it'd just be a nice little nod, I think, to him.
Hopefully we can do something for him. Like you say, a stand name, statue again. I think I agree with you. It would be my preference just because of who he is, you know what I mean?
Yeah, definitely. Rest in peace, Charlie. But look, we'll end on that. You know, thanks again, everyone, for taking the time to listen to us. If you don't already, you can follow us on Twitter at Sensible SAFC or by searching Sensible Sunderland on Facebook. And I mean, as we've said, Lee, look, there's one more to go. Let's just get through with it. All right.
Goodbye.